Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Move Podcast, talking about Amstel Gold Race. By the way, sounds kind of funny saying good evening. Like I've never started this show and said good evening. But, well, I know Johan has. And by the way, while we're at it, there we go. Joined by Johan Bernil over there in Madrid, JB Hager in Austin, Texas. And if you're watching on the show, you actually see George and I sitting pretty much shoulder to shoulder here in Tuscany on a very swanky bike trip. I got to tell you something, and we'll get into this when we talk about Ventum here in a second. George and I, did a little ride yesterday and a pretty good one today. We did almost 6,000 feet of vertical on these roads down here.
They're amazing roads.
I don't know, Johan, I don't know what we were missing, but these roads are insane. Right.
I know what we were missing because I thought about it today. I thought about the same exact thing you just asked. Why didn't we never come here and train? Because you'd be like, climbs aren't steep enough. They're not long enough.
That's true.
I'm not going there.
And the weather guys in early in the season in Tuscany, it's a lot colder than the south of Spain. A lot.
Yeah. And on the socials, it looks a little soggy for you guys.
Yesterday was soggy. But back to this race. So we're talking about Amstel Gold Race, which I got to say, and we'll get into sort of the dynamics and our own personal history. I love this race. I love sort of the difficulty of it, the technical nature of it. And Tadej Pogačar, you know, what can he not do? I think that starts to become the question that everybody is going to have to ask. And again, we'll break all that down even more. But before we do, today's show brought to you by Ventum. We both brought the brand new NS1s here. And you, of course, rode yours with the Flanders trip, and you loved it on the cobbles. This bike, and we're here on these roads that are, you know, they ride at Strade Bianche and the other race called La Roica. Absolutely gorgeous ride. This bike rides, I'm not kidding, it rides like this is my first trip on it. Rides like an absolute dream. And of course, you know, the other bike that we ride from them all the time is the GS1, which, you know, it's even debatable whether or not you could bring a GS1 here. Actually, the NS1 rides amazing, right? Proper wheel setup, proper tire setup. These things are rocket ships.
I agree, and I'm glad you got to ride the NS1 here on the gravels, on the white gravel up Tuscany, because it is, like you said, it's kind of rough.
Yeah.
But I noticed last week or 2 weeks ago when Johan and I were in Belgium, I mean, I loved the feel of the NS1 on the cobbles, super smooth, super responsive, compliant. And then we got here on the gravel, same sort of feeling. Honestly, like you said, we could have ridden the GS1 or the NS1, but I'm happy that you got to ride your brand new NS1.
I love it.
These gravel roads.
So what makes them different? They have amazing customer support. They're creating great content. So if you guys are looking for stuff to inspire you to get out on the road, they're doing it an incredible job there. Also, check out their socials on Instagram and YouTube. Those are both at Ventum Racing. Special offer, you get 10% off when you use the code WEDU, W-E-D-U, at checkout. And again, that's ventumracing.com/themove. Back again this week, Caldera Lab. Like, if you're watching the show, you see me and you're like, dude, the guy's aging a little bit. And then if you see this guy, look at him. He looks, you know, turns out the guy's been using Caldera. He's been buying. He's been a consumer of Caldera Lab. No, don't touch me.
Can you?
No, I'm not. I think the best thing would be to do like a little experiment week over week. But I'm already weirded out.
I'm going to try. I wanted to rub this on his face. I would have done it for the team because I'm obsessed with this product.
So here's the deal. Anyway. Say goodbye to the generic face wash on your counter because Caldera Lab is here to save the day when it comes to your skin. Backed by a leading clinical trial where 9 out of 10 men experienced healthier and visibly improved skin. This all starts with what they call the Regimen Bundle, which is a twice-a-day routine to transform your skin. Parts of the regimen are the Clean Slate, the Base Layer, and the Good. The Clean Slate is where you start your day. The Base Layer is a nutrient-dense fortifying moisturizer that hydrates your skin. And the Good is your go-to at night before bed and clinically proven multifunctional. Keep it over there. As soon as we say the word serum. That helps your skin look tighter and smoother, as well as to help reduce visibility of wrinkles and fine lines. Now, when I hear that,
y'all see the difference right now?
I do see a difference.
Look at this. Look at that.
I mean, God. So today we have an exclusive offer for our audience so you can try for yourself why so many men trust Caldera Lab for their skincare needs. By the way, all you dudes out here listening to the show, I know y'all are out, you know, a lot of us are out riding. in the elements, hammering, you know, just making weird faces. We need this stuff. Here's the deal. 20% off with the code THEMOVE at Caldera Lab. Again, that's CalderaLab.com. That's CalderaLab.com. 20% off. Use the code THEMOVE. Last thing here for a second. Helix Sleep. We've been talking about Helix mattresses for years. The thing I love about what they've added is, as a father of five, the Helix for kids, right? Don't forget the little ones. The Helix Sleep also has kids mattresses designed for children 3 to 12 years old and has been awarded the best mattress win. Check this out. So they won the award in GQ and Wired for the adult mattresses. Now, listen to this. They've now been awarded best mattress winner by Parents Magazine. I mean, don't take it from us.
We're struggling without it here.
No, I know. We're on the road. We're sleeping on these Tuscan beds. Helix, please send your mattresses to this hotel so we can come back. And this is another neat thing. Unlike other mattress companies, Helix actually owns their own manufacturing facility. Every mattress is made in the USA and shipped from their factory to your door. All you got to do is go take the Helix sleep quiz. Take you about 2 minutes. Talk about your sleep characteristics. They'll completely customize it. Also, over 12,000 five-star reviews. Head on over to helixsleep.com. Use the code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Again, that's helixsleep.com/THEMOVE. All right, let's talk about the bike race for a little bit here. Johan, we sort of caught ourselves, and let's just be honest, right? This is what greatness looks like, right? And oftentimes greatness, and this is, it's not going to be a popular thing to say. Sometimes greatness and dominance like that can be boring. Mm. We all knew this was coming, right? The only way this doesn't happen is if, you know, there is an accident or some bad luck, but we knew this was coming. I mean, Tadej Pogačar never done the bike race. His pre-race interview, they tried to ask him. I think
he did it once in 2019, but he was the DNF. He was sick before.
Okay, so I went back. I tried to go back through the years with him. I didn't go past 50th place because you just figure if he's not in the top 50, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
But he sort of showed it. They asked him in the pre-race interview, you know, what were you looking to make it? He didn't even want to get into it. He doesn't really even know the race.
But doesn't know the names of the climbs. I think he obviously did the recon, right? And actually, I don't know if you guys saw his post-race interview where he says that Van der Poel told him to attack on that climb. He could not even pronounce it. But that's the climb here behind me. You know, that picture I have here is for a reason, because I think there you could really see how dominant he was. You know, I mean, this is not just any rider. This is Thomas Pidcock. And on these kind of short climbs, he is also one of the best, and there was just no contest. He just went, accelerated, and just dropped him like a junior.
Yeah, which, Johan, what do the Belgians always say? Like, we were brought up in the school of Belgian cycling. Like, if you get dropped from the breakaway, what does that mean? You work too much. And we saw Tom Pidcock at the front going toe-to-toe with Pogačar the whole time. And when they got to the Kootenberg, I mean, he got dropped.
I feel
like it was a tactical error. He could have maybe not worked as much as he did, but it's easy to say.
I thought, I agree with that.
And also, I mean, Pidcock did have a teammate in that breakaway. So Sheffield, Magnus Sheffield. Yeah. So I think he should have relied on him a little bit more. But, you know, then again, this is just, I think we are witnessing a genius on a bike. As you said, Lance, there's nothing he cannot do. And this is, it's difficult to find a more complete rider than Thomas Pidcock, you know, Olympic champion mountain bike, multiple world champion in the juniors, cyclocross, road, you know, one Alpe d'Huez, the best descender in the world, probably.
I mean, and although this race might not have the attention in terms of technical difficulties, but this is one of the most technically difficult races on the calendar. I mean, I call it the race of 1,000 roundabouts, 1,000 turns, and a couple hundred climbs. I mean, it's nonstop, relentless. The longest straightaway in this race is probably a kilometer or two,
right?
If you watch it. So it's super technical. And the fact that Pogacar coming in as a clear favorite can one, stay out of trouble, two, get in the breakaway that went arguably before the breakaway should go.
90K
he's
from
there, just following.
Right. I mean, I think we don't really know when the breakaway was established, because when the live coverage came on, it was 90K to go and they were gone already.
Right.
So, and then on top of that, what's really amazing also is that in this race, I mean, if you look at what we have seen, there was no teammate for him. He just did it all by himself. They obviously were around him, you know, in the first part of the race and, you know, made sure he was in position. But then being in a group of 16 riders, being the favorite by far, I mean, we did on our outcome show, you know, we looked at the odds at the betting sites, and he was 100, and the next one was Tom Pidcock. He was 1,000.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'm not going to say it's boring. It's boring on one side because you know he's going to win, but then, you know, he had to fight for it, you know, because Pidcock and the surprising Ben Healy, they didn't give up. And, you know, there was a moment when Healy came back to, when Healy dropped Pidcock. I think I said that on the group chat, like
you,
10 minutes.
You said it. It was really interesting. And that played a big part in the actual overall outcome of the podium, because Healy he kind of stayed within himself on the Kutenberg on that picture you have behind you, mm-hmm. where Pidcock went full gas to try to stay on the wheel. And you could see he was just completely dead after that and couldn't recover.
Yeah.
Once you get in the red zone after 200 and some kilometers, it's like being in the red zone at altitude. You can't come back.
Well, especially a punchy race like this. I mean, just that many corners, that many accelerations. If you get a few of them where you get caught out and it just makes it that much harder, it's just death by a thousand cuts.
Lance, you know, what makes this race really so hard is, first of all, the technicality of it. The weather was also a bit of a factor, but let's not forget, you know, it doesn't seem like it, but this race has 3,500 meters of vertical.
Right, I did say that.
Did you? Okay.
No, well, they said it on the. We actually both watched the coverage, so it's, you know. And for those who think in feet, that's, you know, none of these climbs are, you know, none of them are more than 400 vertical feet. That this is to your point, Johan. This is over 10,000 feet mm-hmm. of total climbing for the day.
It's a mountain stage. The equivalent of a mountain stage in the Tour de France.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Ben Healy. Where did this kid come from?
That's like, I'm asking myself to say.
Because he's had some success in a couple of other races recently. And I'm like, we've never mentioned this name before on the move.
Well, you know what? You know what really was sort of warmed my heart, JB? And I'm glad you asked this, because, you know, I can't stand that team. You know, I think they're basically a second division team. I think. Oh, from top to bottom. I mean, I think Vaude, you know, the whole thing is I can't watch it.
I mean,
but I found
it second today.
Can I finish? But I found myself.
and second Wednesday.
Wait, here comes a heartfelt moment. Here it is.
For whatever reason, I found myself, and you heard me.
Yeah.
I found myself really cheering for this kid. You know, obviously hung in there. You know, he couldn't hang with Pogacar, which nobody can. And also got dropped by Pidcock, but he stayed there and he came back. And then it was so great. You know, you did get this right. Johan sent us a note on the group chat saying he's about to drop Pidcock. And when it happened, I just found myself rooting for this guy. And he's kind of holding Pogacar there. I don't know what it was. You know, it certainly wasn't the affiliation with the team, but I don't know if it's because you haven't heard of him. It's because it's this sort of this no-name Irish kid, or if it was sort of the look. He doesn't look like an Irish guy.
He doesn't look like the strongest guy on a bike either.
No, the style on the bike looks like you love a guy when they're out there. Obviously, all these guys are busting their ass, but you love it when they really look like they're busting their ass. He looked like that. It was for the first time ever. And outside of Nielsen Palace, you got to cheer for him too.
He unfortunately had a bad crash today.
Terrible bad luck today. This you know, could have been a great day for him. I was really kind of proud of myself as well, JB.
Acceptance, a little bit of acceptance bleeding.
Johan, talk about so he dropped Pidcock on that second to last climb or around there.
Yeah, on the Bay.
And then dropped him easy too.
Took 10 seconds out on Pogacar. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we see on TV, the race director is right ahead of Pogačar a little bit. I think we're all like, wait, what just happened there?
That was a bit of, you know, we all know Leo Van Vliet, you know, great guy, you know, this the 27th year he's organizing this race already. And I cannot help to think that Leo really wanted Pogačar on the podium. I mean, who wouldn't, right? And there was kind of this moment of hesitation. Okay, is Pogačar fading? Is he all of a sudden so fast? I mean, it came down from 30 to 20 seconds, and then all of a sudden, the race.
I disagree. I mean, the best thing for the race, for the sport of cycling, is Healy catches him and they duke it out. I mean, they made it. Let's be honest here. The most exciting part about this race was when Pidcock almost got caught for third. I mean, that was probably the most exciting.
Right, that was.
These guys behind Kroon and Lutsenko, they're battling it out. It was really close. I mean, we were kind of on the edge of our seats watching that. The rest, I mean, Pogačar obviously dominated. It wasn't.
Why do you think that car went to the front?
I was asking you.
I'm going to say a word now in English. I don't know if it exists.
Oh God.
flagrant? Does it exist?
Yeah, flagrant.
Flagrant. I agree. It's just not acceptable in a World Cup.
Right.
Why would this car all of a sudden need to pass? And
okay,
it made zero sense.
Then tell me why.
Unless he has, you know, one of the main sponsors in the back seat and that just wants to, let me show you, get. Look, hey, it doesn't matter what the reason was. There is no excuse. By the way, Tadej Pogačar does not need a little draft.
He's
gonna be just fine. And it was curious. You know, you're watching and you're. They have plenty of road to drive away, to drive up the road. I don't know. But it also is a standard that we just can't. This should never be, ever. Should you see that, especially in a race like this? But
a lot worse things have happened. A lot worse things have happened with cars and motorbikes and it didn't influence the result. That's the main thing.
Of course not.
And again, you say that Pogačar would have won.
As Johan mentioned, we didn't see the break went so early, but how does Jumbo-Visma let Pogačar go up the road?
It's a great question. That has to be, if not the storyline of the day, you know, certainly number two, because Johan, you brought up a great point. Like when we race this race and even going back in your day, you know, Jumbo-Visma is a team that was originally founded by Jan Rus, right? So whether that was Super Convex or Buckler or Novell or Word Perfect, it's all the same. This is all the same DNA, the same program. And I remember, and of course, in our day and age, it was primarily Rabobank. I remember racing like they had to win the race. There was no like, let's do a good race, maybe get on the podium. No,
I have a simple answer for that.
Okay.
You want it? I mean, Jumbo-Visma has outgrown the race. They have their goals. They had the classics, Flanders, Roubaix. They got the Giro with Roglic. They got the Tour with Bindigo. They are so planned.
That is true.
You know what, Amstel? We're going to send our good guys, but not our best guys, because we have a plan.
Yeah,
and that is outgrown the race.
Yeah, that is true, George. But you know, outgrow the race and not having anybody in a breakaway of 16. And then finally having your best rider finishing 15th and your second best rider finishing 30th, that's not a good result. It doesn't matter what they have done before. Every race, every important race, every team starts from zero again.
Right. And it's also fair to say and to note that those teams that I just mentioned of the Jan Rus generation and as this team has progressed through the decades, they were not winning like this team was winning. So, yes, are they buying themselves? Hey, here's something interesting. One thing I caught, it's been a couple of weeks, and I don't know if there is any fact in this, but I guess Jumbo has a new CMO, and there was some talk about them sort of revisiting their sports marketing initiatives. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in light of that, then it is important, right?
It's
hard to imagine that a team with this kind of success would have to be out looking for a new title sponsor. Now, look, who knows what's going on internally in the business or with the markets, or I don't even know if it's publicly traded, but if the race is in fact that big as it is in Holland, and in fact, Jumbo is reconsidering or sort of analyzing all of their stuff, whether it's cycling or speed skating, those are their big activations. Yeah.
George, not a good day for Jumbo. You know, I mean, listen, we have seen in the Tour of Flanders, how many vans did they have for guests? It was unbelievable. It was like 10 vans, you know, for their VIP program. Imagine what this is in Holland, right?
I agree, but so, you know, these fans, they all know the sport. They know the best guys on the team are either at a training camp or taking a break, and they have their goals, which they've won pretty much everything up till now.
I disagree. I completely disagree with you there, George, because they had good results, but if you look at all the important races, they have not won one. Not one. Okay. I mean, they did win the Tour of the Basque Country. That's what they won. But Milan San Remo, they didn't win.
Yeah.
The Flanders, they didn't win.
Paris-Roubaix, they did.
Paris-Roubaix, they did not win. Amstel Gold Race, they did not win. And we all said this team is unbeatable in the classics.
They won a lot of semi-classics.
Yes, they did. Right? They did.
Okay. Well, look, let's keep an eye on it. There are a few other things we should talk about before we get the heck out of here. But before we do, today's show also brought to you by Athletic Greens. Now, when we say we start our, this is legit, George. When we say we start our day every day with Athletic Greens, we mean it. And I don't know where you put your travel packs. Here they are over here.
I got my travel packs. We're here.
This is something, I mean, I've just sort of grown into this habit of taking Athletic Greens, whether I'm at home or on the road. This is what I use when I'm on the road, the travel packs. It's really a game changer. If you listen, don't listen to us necessarily, or do listen to us, but don't necessarily take scientific and health-related advice from us. But if you listen to all the smart ones, whether it's Huberman or Peter Attia, they'll tell you. You had to do one thing every day. This is the one to do. 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Helps you start your day off just right. All, by the way, for less than $3 a day means nothing when it comes to sort of taking control of your health. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is head to athleticgreens.com/themove. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/themove. Take ownership of your health. Last one of the day, my favorite, George's favorite. Manscaped. Manscaped. Look, the man travels with his Manscaped. He's even got the case. These guys, they never sent me the travel case. He's got his Manscaped thing. I'm still working on him over here on the silhouette where George does the full shave down.
Well,
we are going to make this happen.
Had you let me rub the good on your face, I might've thought about it.
Oh, you didn't say that before. Here's a little bit of cool news. As much as I love this brand, but they're really doing something near and dear to my heart. April is Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. I don't know if you, JB, do you know that?
Did not know.
So they're super involved, helping to raise funds for a great cause. They are the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. They're partnering with the Testicular Cancer Society to remind you to check your golden nuggets this month for anything not so golden. And while you're down there, this is amazing. Shave your balls while you save your balls. I should actually, as I'm reading that, it might be a slightly different read. So let's support a good cause and go to manscaped.com. Use the code THEMOVE to get 20% off plus free shipping. Again, that's manscaped.com and use the code THEMOVE. And again, April is National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month.
And very important, they're donating $50,000 to their longtime partner, Testicular Cancer Society.
That's amazing. Thanks for, on a serious note, really, Manscaped, thank you so much. Awfully important, especially young men out there. You think you're invincible. You're not. So head on over to manscaped.com. Use the code THEMOVE. Get you 20% off.
All right. Now looking ahead, it's mind-boggling to think we're already talking about Pogacar as maybe being one of the greatest of all time. We still have two more classics right around the corner, and he's on peak form. what is possible before we wrap this up with?
He has two this week. As you all know, we were chatting during the race. I knew he was doing Liège, but to do Amstel, Flèche, and Liège basically all in 1 week, it's such a heavy lift.
And Flanders, Flanders.
Yeah, I mean, and now you're talking about races that really suit him. I mean, a race like Flèche Wallonne,
right? He said in the interview that he didn't seem like he'd done it already a few times, and he's never done really well. On this form, I don't see what could happen to him, especially also because the real specialists like Alaphilippe is not racing, Evenepoel is not racing, who can be? Roglic is not racing.
So this is a good question. So Evenepoel's not racing Flèche Wallonne.
No, I don't think so.
But he's racing Liège.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I think the state that team is in, we've talked about it every week, that the sort of what is going on with Quickstep, again, today, if you look at today's performance, non-existent. I disagree with that move. At some point, you have to do something to salvage your spring season. I mean, unless you're really, really gambling on his, Remco and the Giro.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a pretty good, it's a pretty good gamble. Also, he did win.
It's a big game.
Yes, last year in incredible fashion. I think he's the only guy who can go with Pogacar, and then we'll see. Normally, if he goes with him, well, Pogacar wins anyway because he's a lot faster than Remco, right?
No, assume that Remco comes in with the form that he does know how to show up with. That would be a hell of a fight. I would love that. I'd also love to see it in Flèche Wallonne.
That would be exciting.
But kudos to Pogacar for really in 1 week doing the triple. It's not easy. I mean,
which is actually amazing. Also, if you look at how this guy is different from all the other guys, we have all these other. Let's not forget Pogacar in our mind. I mean, he is the double Tour de France winner, so it has to be one of his big goals of the season. Now how cycling has changed and all these teams and all these riders, they race very little and then they go to altitude camps. Pogacar has not been at altitude yet this year.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, a lot of these tactics now around and coming up, Flèche Wallonne, Liège, Bastogne, Liège, is going to be the team tactic, breakaways, and then the Pogacar factor. Like, if we get away with Pogacar, maybe we shouldn't be working or we shouldn't be helping. It's going to change a bunch of the tactics for the team.
I know, George, the thing with these, not just with Pogacar, but with, like, for example, with Mathieu van der Poel, with Van Aert, tactics have become a very small factor of racing right now because these guys just go from very far out. They isolate the leaders, and it's the leaders amongst themselves. It's a race of attrition.
Yeah,
the strongest guy wins almost always. I have not seen any race like one of the big races this year where the strongest rider hasn't won.
Right.
Yeah, agreed. And we actually didn't even mention the fact that Pogacar had to change bikes with a gap of 30 seconds to a very strong breakaway behind him and was stayed super calm, jumped on his spare bike, caught back up to the group. Next climb, boom, seeing the douches.
Yeah, how fast was the race going when he...
It was intense, but it was, they changed bikes on a climb. But I think the thing that sticks out for me is he had been riding a bike that had a wheel that had a slow leak. This is not a race that you want to do any of this with a slow leak.
Those corners,
the steepness of some of the climbs. So, and he couldn't get, as he said in the post-race interview, he couldn't get the team car up there.
Yeah.
So he just kept riding it. This is not a race you want to ride around with any kind of leak. And, he stayed calm. He stayed cool. Finally got the team car there. They seemingly changed it in about 5 seconds. He was back immediately, which is also just amazingly impressive.
Yeah, really stayed calm. I think he really felt like he had great legs. And, to do that effort, 15 seconds. I mean, you always lose 15 seconds in a bike change, right? So, okay, it's uphill, but he has to close those 15 seconds. And then on top of that, the next climb, he's the one going from the bottom of the climb. A little statistic I've put in the notes here. There's four riders who have won the Tour de France and the Amstel Gold Race. big names, Eddy Merckx, Bernard Hinault, Joop Zoetemelk, and Bjarne Riis. And now the fifth guy is Tadej Pogačar. And only one rider, except Pogačar, has won Tour of Flanders and Amstel Gold Race. That's Eddy Merckx. So he's right. Getting there with the really, I mean, with the best. You know,
he's in certainly in his young age, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's in, yeah. And may go on to be, you know, ultimately people are going to judge him if you want to talk about the goats and the greats and the greatest of all time. He will be judged by the Tour de France, right? I mean, I don't care how many of these classics you win, and if you win all these classics for 5-6 years, and you win three tours, that doesn't get in the conversation. I mean, it gets in the conversation, but it doesn't get you there. Ultimately, he has to win. He has to win more than, you know, and it looks weird for me to even talk about this, but let's just say he's got to win more than five tours to beat, but he's well on his way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I had a question. Actually, I asked on the, you know, we're here with a few guys riding bikes for the week. And the one thing that I will say about Colnago, the bike that Tadej Pogačar rides, it really pops on screen. I wonder how it's doing. Like, I wonder how Colnago, this has nothing to do with race, but I'm just curious. And maybe somebody knows, so send it in to us. I wonder how it's doing for Colnago and bike sales, because you really see the, I mean,
great.
I would think it's.
You know, Colnago has been sold to the investment fund of the Emirates. So Ernesto is, I think he still has a small share in it, but it's basically.
They're running the runway anytime soon. They're doing okay.
The owner of
it to be fine.
Yeah, the owner of the team is also now the owner of Colnago. But it's funny you bring that up, because there's a podcast, a famous podcast in Belgium about cycling, and there was a debate between some ex-cyclists.
I heard Boonen was on.
One of them was Boonen and said, "Well, you know, Pogačar is not even on a good bike. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah." Yeah.
What? Good luck for his rivals if he gets the geek go on a good bike. But he had to backpedal, and I heard that the last podcast he was not there because he had been invited by Colnago to go and test their bikes, and he went out there.
I did.
Oh, well. You know, my observation, and I don't know what you guys think, but I just don't associate Pogačar with Colnago the way. Maybe it's their marketing strategy, the way you do with Vanderpool and Canyon. Like, you just make that association so quickly.
It's a different day and age, JB. I mean, I remember the Colnago back in the day with whether it's, you know, Mapei or GB or all these teams, you really did associate them with whether it's, you know, Rominger or, I mean, all these guys way back, and it was much stronger. It's an interesting point, and I don't have an answer or a clear vision on that, but
I don't think they're capitalizing on marketing.
Yeah.
They are. In terms of quality, they are up there with the very best. There's no doubt about it.
You know? I agree.
Just ask
in the United States at all. So I agree, JB, with your point.
All right. Okay. So we'll be back in these seats come Wednesday, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are gonna join us for midweek.
Oh, yes, well.
Oh, we're off of the. I just gave him an out. Did you see how that just happened?
We'll be.
Who? This is funny. It's clearly, the team communication within WeDo is
no
amazing.
I need.
I love the race. I won that race a long time ago.
I need to say something.
We need to hear you say it.
Whenever. Important race there is, and we have an ex-winner on our team, that person needs to be on the show.
Okay, I'll be there. We're in George's bedroom currently, so George, you cool if I leave all this shit set up for a few days?
It up here.
It is an amazing race.
And I encourage people to if you're not a season pass member, pick up the season pass, get your free member tee, discounts on everything. But the season pass... like, you get outcomes, and I'm really, really digging the outcome show with Johan and Spencer, because I believe, Johan, you said watch for Lucinko in this race.
Yeah.
A name we haven't talked about. Like, if you do like to sports bet or just want some inside tips on some names to look for, like, you called that one, and that was true on this race.
Yeah. Yep. He almost got third, almost finished on the podium.
Yeah, I mean, you start to see the huge, massive battle for points, how important it is for all of these teams, even though they're not on the podium. I mean, well, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, it's all about.
You saw a lot of Destiny today. They picked up a lot of points.
Yeah, a lot of Destiny did really well. Astana needs points because they are the worst team in the World Tour right now, like by far. They are like in 30th position or something. Wow. In the whole, and so they need points. They picked up some points, but not enough yet. Anyway, we're not going
to
talk about
I want to plug one other thing, too. If our listeners have not had a chance to listen or watch the interview with Allison Jackson that Mari Holden and Ali Tetrick did last week, it's incredible, especially if you have daughters riding bikes. Talk about inspiring. Like, it's just a great, great interview. So you can catch it on our podcast feed or YouTube if you like. It's an excellent interview.
All right.
Cool. Fantastic.
All right, so we'll see everybody Wednesday for Flesh Alone, and then again, once again, next Sunday for...
Sunday for Vies.
Yeah. Love Bastanoka Lauk, as they say in Flanders.
Yeah. Natuurlijk.
Natuurlijk. Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hey, also, wish me luck the next couple of days riding with this fucking guy who trains full-time. See you guys.
See ya.
Okay, bye.